Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like $1 million.
...scams a bunch of famous athletes out of untold fortunes...
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
It's just unbelievable.
Hide your money in your old Richmond, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, this is Paris Hilton. Trapped in Treatment is back, and this season we're taking on WASP, the Worldwide Association of Specialty Programs and Schools.
They held us in dog cages. They starved us. They beat us.
He was trying to brand us. So we were going to become the McDonald's of kid treatment.
Join my host as they unravel the story of the largest and most shocking organization in the history of the troubled teen industry. Listen to Season 2 of Trapped in Treatment on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, dude.
The 90s called.
With Christine Taylor and David Lasher.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Hey, Dude, the 90s called podcast. I am one of your co-hosts, David.
Hi, David. I'm Christine, your other co-host.
I know who you are.
And I know who you are. We have a great show, but we should also talk about our YouTube, right? Should we? Because we have a great guest who's in the waiting room.
Oh my gosh, I'm so glad you brought that up. I think it's dropping today. Our Hey Dude, the 90s.
So by the time you're listening to this, you'll already be able to access it. Yes, like at least a few episodes, maybe. I'm not sure.
We have to talk to iHeart about it. I think they're dropping 3 episodes per week, but all of our podcast episodes are on video, and they're going to be dropped onto iHeartMedia's brand new YouTube channel, which I think is going to be phenomenal.
People have been asking us, where can we see the video? Because a lot of times our guests will hold up a picture, or they'll reference what they look like or they're wearing, and you'll obviously see us in Zoom box form, because that's how we do this, because we live on different coasts.
Right. But David, you were very helpful with the iHeart team on a very colorful, eclectic, you did a great job.
Our yellow, our Hey Dude, the 90s called yellow and turquoise and pink. Come on.
iHeart's going to make it look really cool and fun. And, I have to say, my new best friend is Joey McIntyre.
Oh my God.
Did you text him or no?
I didn't text him yet.
Oh, you didn't text?
No, it's been a crazy busy week for me, but I thought of that today actually, because I was like, I try when we have our guests' numbers, which we sort of like, he reached out to us about the tour and said, listen,
we want to invite them to a new kid show. They're touring this summer. So I texted him. You said you were going to text him to thank him for the interview. So I did. And then we've been going back and forth And he's sending me new music.
Oh, that's so great.
He's like, I want to see your movie. I sent him something that I directed. And
you're really new besties. I love this.
He's just such a sweetheart of a guy. And his new music is amazing.
Now that you said that, I'm actually going to send him a text and thank him and just tell him, because I've gotten so much, even just from friends of mine who I don't even think listen to the podcast, but they were giant New Kids fans. Oh my God, you fulfilled all of my childhood dreams. He is amazing.
He is such
a sweetheart. I thought he had the best sense of humor. So I will send a message, because I won't infringe on your BFF status with him, but
on my bromance. No, you can have your own thing with him.
But I also, because he's such a musical theater guy too, I gotta get my like musical theater info from him of when he's coming back to Broadway and all of those.
Last week's episode was amazing. But we have, you talk about one of your co-stars today.
I know, we've got Skeet Ulrich. I always know, like, I think it's Ulrich, right? But
Ulrich.
That's what I've always said, but some people say Ulrich. So I don't know. But anyway, he's in the waiting room. We did a movie together a million years ago that is The Craft. And a lot of people that at 90s Con talked to me about how obsessed they were with The Craft. And so I want to talk to him a little bit about that, but I want to hear everything from him. So why don't we let him in? Many good ones. All right. So why don't we let him in?
Yep. Let's welcome Skeet Ulrich.
Hey.
Oh my God. Look at you.
Stranger. Look at you. You don't ever age, do you?
Neither do you. Look at you. Oh my God. Have you guys met David and Skeet? Have you guys ever met or worked together?
Skeet Ulrich, thank you for being on the show, by the way. This is like a thrill. Our kids went to the same elementary school, and my wife rarely gets excited about our guests. You know, like last week, I'm like, seriously, you don't know New Kids on the Block? Like, where were you? But she says, when I said Skeet's name, she was like, oh my God.
Aww.
Yeah. So our kids went to the same school.
How old are your kids? Were they there at the same time?
I have a 14-year, I have two kids in college, but it was my 14-year-old daughter, Chelsea, that went, I think, to the same school as your kid.
Yeah.
Christine, this is like this little neighborhood school.
I know it. I know it. Exactly. I used to live right there. So I know exactly where it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
We lived near each other too for a brief amount of time.
Yes. I was going to say, I think your twins came to a birthday party. I think it was like Ella's maybe second birthday. Yeah. I was just thinking about that. We were that, you know, we all remember that stage where like the babies, the sort of young kids, and they don't really have friends yet. Like they have a few kids that they play with in preschool, but you're like, oh, we're going to do a birthday. Like, let's just invite our friends with kids and people we know, because they're just going to do their thing. But yeah, that was a really, we found pictures of that party. So fun. I mean, it was a crazy, I just remember it was like all these people Ben was working with and people that and you guys were in the neighborhood. So,
And that was such a lush property. You guys had that spread on that corner. Oh my God.
Yeah. That was such a great neighborhood. That was such a, this was up in the Hollywood Hills, David. It was sort of like, it then became a little bit of like the tour buses kind of made their rounds eventually. Like when we first moved in there, it was a much more quiet place. And then it just kind of became like, I'll never forget Jerry Stiller coming to, I think it might've been that birthday party, and like ringing our doorbell outside, and one of the tour buses pulled up and he started chatting. And Anne is like, Jerry, don't engage. Come on. We're going to the kids. And he was just answering questions, and you know, they've got the megaphones.
Amazing.
Lifetime ago.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, thank you for coming and talking to us.
Thanks for having me. It's so cool. I haven't done many podcasts, to be honest. Maybe two.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
We're so honored.
No.
Are you a listener, though? Do you listen to podcasts?
I don't. I think that's why, you know, I'm so old school. Like, I don't.
I'm same, almost same. Like I started to listen a little more when we talked about doing this together, but I'm the same. Like Ben is a podcast nut. Like he listens, he knows it's how he gets his news. He's like literally like so dialed into like every different genre of podcast. And I am just sort of like, oh, I get in my car and I still listen to music.
I know, I listen to the radio.
Right, exactly.
You know what I love about it? And I've been listening to podcasts for a long time, and that's why I came to Christine with this. It's like, you know, you watch someone on a late night talk show or, you know, or a morning show, and they have these like planned little jokes and interviews. And this is like, you know, we get, you know, Christine, we've gotten to know things about people that are, we had no idea. Like some of the interviews that we didn't really know about the people become the most fascinating interviews.
Right. Yeah. Certainly a long, you know, much longer form and ability to, you know, to connect in a way that you can't really in those shows. I mean, I'm down. I just am, you know, old. So.
You don't look old, man.
I don't know. I lived in this house like 19 years and it's been amazing. I build furniture. I've always kind of built furniture and now it's planting season. I have gardens, terraced gardens. So I plant all kinds of different fruits and vegetables. And
look at you. Oh my God. That's amazing. And by the way, when you live in California, like you have to take advantage of it.
Absolutely. It's the only place of citrus in your yard.
Exactly.
It's insane. Well, maybe not the only place, but certainly, you know.
Where you can have it year round. Yes. Yeah. And that's just part of the plantings. Like you can literally pick fruit from the trees. All right. So, but you're not from California originally.
No, I was born in Virginia, in the mountains of Virginia. And then kind of raised all over until I was about 10. And then I was in North Carolina until I went to NYU.
Okay. All right.
Oh, you went to NYU?
I did.
Tish?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Christine and I were this close, but we didn't do it.
We ended up doing that TV show and then just not going. That's our story.
I wouldn't sit here today if it wasn't for my experience there, to be honest. I was a very Southern, let's say, you know, kid out of a NASCAR family who had no, you know, who nobody had paved the way for the arts. Arguably building engines is an art in itself, but I mean, performing arts, no one had, you know, been in that avenue. So it was just, thank God I got in that program. And it was Mamet and William H. Macy who taught it. And they had Mamet had this thing where this was pre-internet, where you had to answer 10 questions. And it took 2 to 3 weeks for me to even find a modicum of what those answers may be. They were so obscure. And this is going to the library every day after class. I was at UNCW as a marine biology student and dying to get out. And so I did all that, you know, 2-3 weeks of work, and then you go up and do an interview. And their whole point is that if you have the willpower to answer those questions or to even try to, you have the willpower for him to teach you how to act. And he took 16 kids.
Was this the Atlantic Theater Company? Mm-hmm. Okay, because my son, our son just did a summer program at Tisch last summer, and he did the Atlantic.
In Vermont?
No, he did it at Tisch. Yeah.
Amazing. Wow.
But they gave them the book to read. I don't think they had answered the 10 questions for this 4-week summer program.
Yeah, I think that was only then. It's not that way anymore. From what I hear with Tisch, they assign you a studio. You can't really pick.
Choose. Exactly.
If I had to audition to get an NYU, they would have laughed me out of the room at that point, to be honest. So I guess my message to everybody is if you have a dream and you set your heart to it and your mind to it, you can do things you can't even fathom.
Wait, can we just back up 1 second? Are you saying that David Mamet and William H. Macy were two of your teachers?
They taught acting at that time.
Incredible.
Yeah. And, wildly, my now co-star, Giancarlo Esposito, guest taught at that time at my class. And
wait, so you remember him coming in?
God, yeah, he was.
So incredible, and we're gonna. I want to hear all about the new show too, but we're gonna get to that.
He, you know, he was doing a play at Atlantic that he won the Obie for, and he was mesmerizing. And then, you know, I guess he, you know, because he was in the theater all the time, he guest taught a couple classes here and there, and he was just. I mean, he's a force.
Oh.
So I've been aware of him since 91 when that play was. And
it's just incredible. Did you ever, I don't want to get off on a tangent, but did you ever do a mammoth play?
I haven't done a mammoth play.
Okay.
Oddly. Yeah. That may not have gone well. Even trying to do a scene in front of him would have been intimidating. No.
Like real quickly, I did Glengarry Glen Ross at a theater in West Hollywood with an amazing cast. Ian Gomez put it together. Anyway, it's like if you the rapid fire dialogue, if somebody messes up the whole, it's like a domino. You know, my gosh, what do we do now? It was the scariest thing I've ever done. But I mean, I can't imagine learning acting at that age from David Mamet. How incredible. Yeah.
I mean, he had, you know, they set us up in such a great way in the theater training. Liz Himmelstein was our speech teacher. She's almost thanked at every Oscar. You know, she's a dialect coach for Nicole Kidman, Naomi Watts, you know, Sam Rockwell, you name it. She's like, but she was, you know, a theatrical voice teacher at the time.
It sounds like it was worth the price of tuition.
It was definitely worth it. Yeah. And I owe my stepdad a thank you, a big thank you, which I give to him almost daily. He's like, all right, I've heard it enough. Shut up.
Oh, no, the gratitude, man. That's
good. Yeah.
But that's amazing for you to figure out, like, to go from, you know, growing up the way you did, ending up in college, you know, going into science. And then what made you pivot? Did you see plays, or were you always just interested in film and television? Like, what made you make that decision for yourself?
I think a couple of things. You know, I remember as a freshman, you know, I wound up, somebody, a PA came into the dorm, and I happened to be coming in at the same time, and they were looking for extras for Weekend at Bernie's, which I was in Wilmington, North Carolina.
No, stop it.
I was like, what do you mean? What does this do? What do you do? And they're like, well, give me $50. And I was like, gold, what do I do? Because I didn't really have much money. I, you know, 50 was a lot.
Of course.
So I was like, all right. And then I got kind of interested in it, you know, I was in those party scenes at that house and shit.
Oh, wait, so you were in Weekend at Bernie's as an extra? Yeah. That's so awesome.
Like hoop earrings in.
No. Such a classic. That movie.
Such a classic. And then I did a couple other things, but in the same time, in terms of school, I realized I was like cheating on my botany tests and stuff like that. And like, I was like, maybe this isn't for me. And I had always kind of built things. So I took a set design class. And part of that was building sets for that theater. And in doing that and, you know, watching the plays and striking the sets, I'd slowly look. It hit me. I remember standing on stage. They have this big proscenium theater there. And I remember standing on the edge, and it was empty. And we had struck the set. And I went, oh, they have to listen. And it was like the first time. And then the power of metaphor, you know, of you know, all those things I was never able to tell anybody. And I had a pretty chaotic childhood and life at that point. And I was like, man, I can use those words to say, and no one will know what I'm really saying.
But I get to express it, right? Yeah, I get to just put it out there.
The power of subtext and what we do. And I think, you know, well, that's a whole other thing.
I know, but also what you studied at NYU, that Meisner technique is like, you know, taking things from your own life and using it for your character.
Yeah, right. the as if.
That's what Quinn did all summer. He goes, I have to do an as if. Mom, I have to do an as if. He's going to die when I tell him this. He's going to be like, oh my God.
So it's wild.
It works. It really clicked for him too. I remember when it clicked, it was like the aha moment of like, oh my God, I so get this now.
But
at the beginning, he was just overthinking. You know what I mean? It was like trying to do it so technically that it was like, no, let's just like forget. He had a great teacher too, but not Mamet or Macy, but.
I mean, once in a lifetime, obviously. But there are people equally as good, I'm sure. They're not, you know, they're just such, I think, all of it has value, you know, like some people learn by doing and being on set and being under the pressure of that. And some people learn in a different way. So it's, you know, there is no right or wrong. And I think you ultimately learn that as a performer, as even in scenes and lines and everything, there's no right or wrong, you know?
Right. And it's what works for you. What is the truest for you?
Yeah.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am, like I am, where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, this is Paris Hilton. Trapped in Treatment is back, and this season we're taking on WASP.
They held us in dog cages. They starved us. They beat us. They burned us and subject us to really horrible, cruel and unusual punishment.
After my personal experience at Provo Canyon School, I was shocked to learn that a man named Robert Litchfield, a man who got his start at the school that I went to, would go on to create a multi-million dollar empire.
He was trying to brand us, so we were going to become the McDonald's of kid treatment.
The Worldwide Association of Specialty Programs and Schools.
They prey on, you know, a parent's really natural and beautiful love for their children in a really, really, unfortunately, effective way.
At this time in my life now, if someone presented this program to me, and not just because I've already experienced it, sham, scam, beware.
Listen to season 2 of Trapped in Treatment on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout, and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So you go through 4 years. You went all 4 years?
I went three.
Three? Okay. And then right to LA?
No, I did a play, you know, we did plays obviously at school and stuff. And a friend of a friend came, and she was like a casting assistant to, was it Julianne Taylor? That was the big one at that. I can't remember all the
Juliet. Names.
Juliet Taylor. Yeah. She was like the, so she was like an assistant to her, and this woman's name is Aline Kashishian, who is now one of the like most incredible managers on the planet. And anyway, she asked me to come audition, and then she had, was slowly pivoting into ICM to become an agent. And then it just sort of, you know, evolved that we had wound up with a working relationship, and I got an audition for like an after school special that I got, and that,
that dates us all.
That really tells our age right there.
Right there. Welcome to the 90s. And that parlayed into that director wound up directing the first film I did. She had had it lined up, and Winona Ryder was in it, and Lucas Haas, and John C. Reilly. And
what was that?
It was called Boys.
Right.
Oh yes, yeah, yeah.
And I went down to, you know, to do, she asked me to, you know, to, I didn't really have a part in it. She was like, you know, there's, I really like, you know, working with you and this and that, and like, you know, maybe come down to Baltimore where we're shooting, you can, you know, do the table read, and I want you to play this one, you know, cop who has like, you know, three or four lines or something. And I was like, sure, great. And they were trying to make a deal with, I can't remember who it was, Vigo or Brad or somebody big for this one part. So they had, that had not been done by the time the table read happened. So they said, will you read this part? And I was like, yeah. And Winona and I like sparked in the read through and all this stuff. And the end of the read through, they asked me to play that part, which was much more substantial.
And this was all Juliet Taylor advocating for you.
No,
and
that was not Juliet Taylor at all. That was unrelated. Oh. That sort of went away. I mean, that was, Billy Bathgate was that audition.
And, oh, yes. Right.
And it did. Obviously, I didn't get it. Lauren Dean did. But,
right.
but yeah, that was, you know, this was many months after that and doing an after school special and then sort of rolling into this, you know, director's next project. And
right.
And things just happened. And I was so horrible and so nervous. And but
I know, but people saw something in you, whether it was Juliet or that director in the after school special. Like, we, you know, as actors, you always need some sort of like mentors to like,
yeah,
to give you that push. I mean, we've talked to so many actors about that, that they can look back and they can pinpoint one or two people that made all the difference for them.
Yeah.
In the early days.
Absolutely. I think there were, you know, there were several. I mean, it seemed like every teacher in that program had something to offer that was just like, oh, wow. And, you know, I was so green and untrained, and that they almost really favored that, not as a teacher's pet kind of thing, but because I didn't have any tricks. I didn't have anything to unlearn, you know.
Right.
So I was such a sponge for it. And, but in terms of work stuff, I don't know, you know, it just, you know, it seemed like if you came out of New York theater at that time, you, when you got to LA, you were instantly put on a pedestal, and, you know, given some chances that others may not be given.
Right. There was a respect.
Yeah. There really was. And I'm sure there still is. I mean, it's, you know, but yeah, what a time.
So what year was Boys?
Boys must have been, I graduated in 93, so we must have shot it in 94, 90, yeah.
Okay, so Winona at that point was huge, yeah. Right? And so how was that experience? Like you said, you were, you know, you'd done the after school special and you'd done your weekend at Bernie's.
Not to laugh, no.
But like, how did that feel stepping into this role with this huge movie star who was like, you know, I mean, literally the biggest.
She was at that time. At my that God, she was in every movie.
It was terrifying. I mean, you know, she's so charming and beautiful and like, you know, and she had this thing that honestly, I don't know that I've seen it since. And I've worked with a lot of great actresses, yourself included, who like, there was this light that went on when they said rolling. And it just, something sparks inside of her when it's that moment. And it was, and like the first take I had with her, I got lost. It like happened and I had the first line and I was like,
you were watching her. You were like admiring her performance.
Yeah, and it was supposed to be the opposite, where I'm like this pro baseball player, she's this small town girl. You know, I wind up getting her drunk and we're popping pills, and then I crash the car into this lake and I die and she lives, and that becomes the, you know, the secret she's hiding all the way through, whatever. But it was the opposite. I was the one sort of like, she should have been looking at me the way I was looking at her. But yeah, I don't know. I was very nervous and, you know, I mean, I got through it and it is what it is, but it was not easy. I we had another scene like that first day and, you know, we shot her side and then we turn around and like, you know, it's in the car and I look over and she's just eating a sandwich off camera. And I'm like,
so chill, just like doing her thing.
Wow.
Everything. I mean, that's how we all learn though. Like you know, yeah. Obviously you had great teachers at NYU, but you get on set and there are directors and other actors that you absorb their experience.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a big learning moment. And then I don't think I worked for like, somewhere between 6 months and 12 months, and, you know, maybe a little longer to get my next project.
Was that The Craft? No, right after that?
It was Bruce Beresford, who won an Oscar for Tender Mercies. It was Sharon Stone's Dead Man Walking called Last Dance. She was on death row. I played her brother.
Oh my gosh.
Right.
And, Randy Quaid, and I mean, it was really, you know, an interesting piece, and there was a lot of emotional requirements for it because this is my sister being dragged to the electric chair and all this shit. And it was quite the experience. But then during filming that, we were in Nashville at that point, and Robin Tunney, who I had known from New York, got in touch with me and was like, you know, there's this script I think you'd be great for, you know, and they want to meet you. And it was crazy. Then all of a sudden I was on a plane and to LA, and I get there, they pick me up, they take me right to Doug Wick's house, the producer.
Right.
Robin's there, and I'm like, oh my God, this is what like auditioning out here is like. You go to this mansion and like
welcome
you
to
like
LA.
Sit on a couch and you chill with people.
Chats and like everybody's on your team, and I was like, wow. And then that obviously happened, but like, yeah, that was my
what is it? You're talking about The Craft that you guys did together?
Yeah, yeah.
All right, you guys gotta tell me about that, because how was that experience?
Yeah, well, I wanted to hear that. I had no idea that was how it went for you. Like, I was going to ask you if it was something you had auditioned for a million times, or how that happened.
It was just sort of Robin's, you know, inclination and intuition, and her, you know, kind of putting it together and giving me a shot, and
right.
Worked out. You know, I mean, I had to audition with Robin in front of the producer, and Andy was there as well.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, but what an entree. Like, I didn't have to, you think about it now, it's like for Parrish, you know, my daughter and I made a tape in my kitchen. You know, and you think, oh, wow, you know, like, who knows if anyone's ever even going to see this?
Right. I know. Isn't it crazy now? I know. I feel like my memory of The Craft, because I had just done the Brady Bunch movie and I auditioned for Robin's part.
Yeah.
I just remember day one. I don't even know. I mean, it was at that school that we shot at. And I don't know that you and I had a scene together, but I met you because our trailers were right next to each other. And you had, and I don't even know if you remember this, a VHS copy of the movie Swimming with Sharks. Like, you had just gotten like a screener of it or something. Oh, wow. And you were like, and I don't know what your connection to it was at all, but I just remember you saying, like, I got this movie that I'm going to watch. Like, do you want to like come in? Like, and I remember us watching that movie together while we were like killing time. And I know, like that was the first time I met you.
So I would not remember that. Now I will never forget it.
Right.
I had just auditioned for Kevin and I wound up doing Albino Alligator right after that.
Right. That's what it was.
It's a Kevin Spacey movie where Frank Whaley plays the assistant. Yeah. It's, I mean, classic Hollywood.
Yep. Yep. Yeah.
Amazing movie.
And you had your VHS, your VHS again, dating us.
Oh, dating us. Gosh, stop doing that.
Worked in trailers.
Exactly. Oh my gosh. Yeah. No, The Craft, who knew? Like, I remember Andy saying to me, like, there's this part, she's horrible, but we loved you in the Brady Bunch. I would love for you to play it. She's an awful human being. Every bad thing you could imagine. And I was like, I would do anything to be in this movie. Like, it just, and it was so much fun. The limited time that I was there. And I gotta tell you, and I know for a fact, because David and I just did our first convention, like 90s con last week.
Yeah.
The amount of Craft posters, and I saw your name tattooed on a girl's arm that I had to sign a piece of paper for that was going like right next to Rachel True's tattoo on her arm has the entire cast. Yeah. Yes. And I kept thinking to myself, she's really like in 20 years going to be so bummed that she just has all of our names.
It's not, man. It's wild though, because we do them for Scream. You know, we go to these conventions.
Yes.
But, I mean, they are still rabid for both. And yeah, you see that a lot. Tattooed.
Christine, some girl had a picture of you with your hair falling out.
I was horrified.
Tattooed on her.
No, thank God. No.
Oh my goodness.
When the spell gets cast on me and the hair starts coming out, she screenshotted something on her TV and blew it up. So, because that's not a picture that circulated often. So that was, and she told me
such things.
But she told me that you took a picture of it with your phone to use.
I did to show you and say, what the hell is this?
Yes. No, it was sad at that point. It was like she had really got, you know, the character that I played was awful. And, but that was a blast. And so was that sort of for you? Like, did that change things? Because I feel like The Craft became more of a cult following, but it wasn't like a massive box office success.
Well, it opened number one.
Or was it? Was it?
It opened number one. I don't know. I can't tell you much past that, but we were shooting Scream when it opened, Nev and I. And so we got to celebrate it opening number one.
That is crazy. That's so cool. So you went right into Scream, Albino Alligator?
And then I did my first lead, which was Chris Walken and I and Bridget Fonda, an Elmore Leonard script that Paul Schrader directed called Touch. And I played the Second Coming of Christ in modern day LA, this dark comedy.
Well, you said Bonfire of the Vanities?
No, not Bonfire of the Vanities.
Oh,
Touch.
It's called Touch.
Touch. Yeah. How was working with Chris?
It was odd. I mean, it was amazing. he's incredible. And, you know, I had so many wild, fun, cool moments and stories. And after the first couple of days, Paul Schrader came to me and he was like, you got to stop imitating him. and takes. I was like, I am? He's like, yeah. He's like, come watch. And I was like, oh,
oh no.
He's,
it's so tempting to imitate him though.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but we had a great time. I'll never forget. Like, I had to pee one time and I was leaving set and his trailer was closest and I knocked on his door. I was like, Chris, can I use your bathroom? And he's like, yeah, come in. And I go in and he's sitting at the vanity with an uncut, unscaled fish. Like, and I was like,
what?
What are you doing? He's like, having lunch. You know?
What an eccentric man. Oh my goodness.
Oh God. It probably smelled great in there too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fish in a trailer is.
But it was incredible. That was, and then I left, you know, once we finished that, then I did Scream.
All right. So that had to have been completely life-changing.
That's the one.
That was, you know, it was wild. I had, you know, it was just such an interesting like time. And I had, you know, doing Kevin Spacey's movie, Faye Dunaway played my mom. And, you know, it was Matt Dillon who was just.
Oh, my God. You worked with like.
Seriously. Can we just say that, like, thank goodness you didn't get some pilot, you know, for the CW that went for 7 years, like the people, your path is really incredible. The projects that you got, it was the universe was telling you, you're going to work with great people.
It was really, you know, I feel blessed, I guess is probably the right way to describe it.
And yeah.
Incredibly lucky to be able to stand toe to toe with some of the great, you know, performers
and learn from them yeah,
absolutely. And you know, that was certainly one of them. And you know, Viggo Mortensen's in that, and Gary Sinise and Matt Dillon and John Spencer and Faye, and I mean, it just went on and on, the cast, Bill Fichtner, just incredible performers. And then to, you know, go to Touch and the same thing, and then Scream, like, was just, you know.
Kids, all cool. Like, how did that feel to just be doing something with sort of peers that was just seemed like a total blast?
It was incredible. You know, it was my first bad guy, you know, like I had, I guess, arguably. Chris Hooker's not.
He wasn't the best, right?
So for most of that, I'm like in this spell, and I'm this doe-eyed, you know, like
right,
lovelorn guy.
Yeah,
yeah, he's not exactly a hero, but arguably my first real villain, and I was so excited. And I remember I had press was starting to happen and stuff like that, and I had an interview with Interview Magazine over the phone. And, you know, we were talking about some of those films that were starting to come out and stuff. And they were asking what I was doing next. And I was like, oh, my God, I'm so excited. I'm going to play this serial killer. And then after the conversation.
Oh, no, you gave away the plot.
I called my publicist. I was like, you got to call them right now. You got to call them right now.
The biggest spoiler of all time.
Wes Craven's would have killed you.
I would have been shot on show. But they got a hold, you know, and they were like, oh my God, yeah, obviously we won't run that. You know, but man, that's how excited I was to, like, you know, to play that part and to get to dive into that sort of menace, hidden menace.
It's
an extraordinary experience. Like, I mean, Courtney was obviously massive at the time, and still is, with Friends. And, you know, Nev had Party of Five, which was, you know, and The Craft subsequently coming out and stuff. So she was, but the rest of, well, Drew obviously had a career already, but
right.
The rest of us were kind of unknown, like untapped, and like, you know, just, and horror was kind of dead at the time, and Wes's couple movies prior to that had not done great. And, you know, there was, in fact, Marianne Magdalena told me many years later that they had, like, Miramax had pulled the plug on it after they shot all Drew's stuff first, and they pulled the plug on it and were like, we don't get this. We're not going to risk this. Like, you know, we don't.
What? Dude, that opening of Scream with Drew getting the, I mean, it's, How could you not get dailies?
They were just looking at dailies. So Wes and Kathy Conrad and Marianne like rushed together, and you know, you're talking days. There's no digital. You know, had this had to begin cut the beginning together in a rush and rushed it to New York, and they watched it cut together, and they were like, oh, okay, all right, now
okay.
But you're right. I mean, horror, like as a horror movie fan growing up, like, cause I loved the original Nightmare on Elm Street and like those, that I just remember when Scream was going, cause I auditioned for that too. Of course, I like was dying to be in that movie.
For what? Which role? The Drew
role?
For
the Nev part. For the Nev part. Okay. But I remember just thinking like this, when I read it, this is so smart. This is literally it's just brilliantly written and it's going to be huge. And it literally changed. I mean, it brought horror back to the, you know, mainstream.
It's wild. There's something about Wes's understanding of that. I mean, and the only reason I say it's like now, God, almost 30 years later, 28 years later, whatever it is, and the fact that people still line up around the block, every city we go to have, you know, and it's, I'm talking it has spanned generations. Now, like, you know, you see like 8 to 12-year-olds who are like screeping, you know, dressed up as Ghostface. And granted, that's been handed down to them, but they're still... It keeps going. And it's, you know, the only thing you can sort of think, because when does that ever happen, is that Wes was on to something. And, you know, the only thing I can surmise from my experience with him is he knew, and he elaborated on a few times about, if you can get people laughing, you open them up just enough to scare the shit out of them.
Oh, that's so good. That is so good.
And it's so true, you know, because you get them vulnerable and then boom. And so that mix of comedy and horror that is Scream is, you know, I think he had been fine tuning that for a while.
And I read something that initially you didn't see the comedy in it. Is that true?
Like
that
what I was trying to explain to that person was that to that journalist was that as an actor, I put myself in the mindset that this was a documentary about two killers so that I could step into that rawness and sort of, you know, and I'm a massive John Cassavetes fan. So I like sort of, you know, odd angles and wide shots and physical, you know, bodies moving through space. So I just was in that mindset. I definitely knew that, obviously, the humor inside of it, but Billy is not playing anything funny.
Exactly. So, no, that's what I was going to say. For you to play it the way you played it, but then there's Matt Lillard, who is like...
Jamie Kennedy?
Right.
And Jamie Kennedy.
Yeah, I'll be right back. You know, like,
that's what I meant by that. I definitely was aware of it, but I was more focused in trying to play Billy.
So great.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am, like I am, where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, if, no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s,
she looked like a million bucks,
with zero qualifications,
she had a Harvard plaque,
tricks her way past a wall of lawyers and agents.
She's got all of these Maseratis and Bentleys all in the driveway.
Is it like a mansion?
Yes, it's a mansion that this queen of the con uses to scam some of the biggest names in professional sports out of untold fortunes.
About $6 million.
Approximately $11 million.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
Employing whatever means necessary to bleed her victims dry.
She would probably have sex with one of her clients.
Hide your money in your old Richmond because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout, and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Can we talk about As Good As It Gets? Because, one of my favorite movies, you know, tell us about that experience.
Again, going into...
Seriously, it's ridiculous.
Jim Brooks, the cast, I mean, oh my God. Jack, I mean, come on.
You know, I spent 7 months on that movie. I had a bunch of scenes hit the editing floor. His first cut was 5 hours long and he had to lose bunch of stuff, which included, you know, more of a budding relationship between Greg Kinnear and my character and some stuff at the beginning where initially I get picked up off the street. They take me to an art party where I, much like the character would do, start, you know, change the music and start doing a strip tease in the middle of all these elite wine drinking like art fans. And then the original ending was Jack coming, you know, they track me down on the streets and they send Jack out because I'd don't know him, to lure me back to the car and get me arrested. And his opening line in that scene is, I'd like to purchase a blowjob.
How did that not make it in the movie?
You know, here's the wild thing is, like, Jim was so upset that this had to happen this way. He gave me that painting, which is a whole nother wild story about my fandom of that artist. And he happened to be the artist who painted it. And anyway, I gave it to my mom. She's had it forever. But he gave me, you know, a VHS of some of the outtakes of some of the scenes that were cut out. And I had not until like 4 months ago had it digitized. And so I hadn't watched it. And you watch it now and you're like, man, yeah, I see that would not have fit at all. Like in what we know of As Good As It Gets to be, I was like, yeah, no, you couldn't put that in there. That wouldn't work. You know, like,
but you know, the relationship between you and Greg Kinnear, while it, you know, was not the lead part of the story, yeah, you know, you guys connecting. And then there's a moment where he looks at you like, you're f-ing robbing me. And you have this moment of guilt and shame. And then your boys beat the crap out of him. It's so effective. And it's the parts of the movie that I remember.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, such an incredible experience. Like Jim is just, I mean, it's next level. And it's this artistry and this like empathy. I mean, there are not enough positive adjectives to describe that man. And you know, going all the way back to Taxi, I had heard, and now I, having worked with him fully, know, like he, you can hear him laughing, and
in,
they couldn't
in
get
Taxi
on that. To, like, yeah, he's off camera, and you know, it's a, you know, but he can't help but laugh, and there's no way to mix it out of, you know, some of the stuff they were doing because it happened so much. So I mean, and that's how he was. He was just so like in the moment with each and every character, and just such an incredible inspiration of a man. And, you know, there was a thing that happened in rehearsals that I thought just summed up the power of Jack Nicholson and how he works and what he thinks about. But he said, here, I'll put this here. He said, you know, I've been thinking about playing old. And I think the key is to treat every object in the room as if it's the age you want to be. So if this glass is 90 years old, I want to be careful not to disturb the dust around it because it might just crumble. And we were like, and you watch them just sort of physically age right there, but his attention's outside of himself. And like, and Jim Brooks was like, that is genius, Jack. Like, I mean, you have to tell people about that. And he's like, well, then they'd know what I was doing.
it's his secret sauce.
But I got instantly that this is a guy who spends 24/7 thinking about how to bring reality to the screen. And that's why he's Jack Nicholson. You know, it's not by accident. He is a working actor, like working.
Right.
Whether he's working or not, he's working.
I think that's one of his most powerful human performances. Cause you know, there's a Few Good Men and The Shining. He plays these, you know, over the top characters, but in As Good As It Gets, he plays just a, you know, obsessive, compulsive, angry, lonely man. I think it's one of his best roles.
Yeah, I agree.
Yes. And I just showed our daughter Terms of Endearment, you know, fairly recently. Mm. And that's another one of his best performances. Yeah. And that's a Jim Brooks movie. Like it's like hearing that is amazing to imagine. And what a gift to be able to just be and have that experience. Like I imagine you left a better actor, a better performer.
I've got a lot to learn. Like I've got a lot to learn. I mean, that's one thing about, I've been blessed to work with some of the best, but each and every time you're like, you do learn, but you're like, oh my God, how do I get, get there? Like, how do I get there? And they make you better, you know, they're like, you know, just the power of the moment, you know. And I probably one of the highlights of my career was getting a call from Gary Oldman asking, he asked me to do a movie with him, and we wound up making that movie. And we had the most incredible time together. And he's just such a phenomenal, obviously, talent. I mean, he has been forever. And you know, he said this thing to me near the end. He was like, you know what I like about working with you? And I was like, what?
Please tell me.
Let me record it. Hang on.
I'll remember it forever.
And he said, no, you know, we were both in some, you know, stressful relationships at the time. And he said, no matter what's going on in your life, you put the character's emotions first and you adapt to that. If you're upset, you don't come in and suddenly the character's upset. you know, you're able to adapt to what's needed by the character. And I was like, oh my God, like forever. Like
incredible compliment from him. I mean, he's such a master. So
I, you know, and it was the wildest thing, because when I met him, he was doing The Contender and I was living on a farm in Virginia at the time, and he was working in Richmond, which was like an hour and a half drive from me. So he was like, well, come over to lunch, you know, whatever. So I drove over, and he was that curly headed senator with the, you know, the Northeastern accent and all this stuff. And like, we had lunch and whatever, and cut to 2 months later, I see him in, you know, Utah. He started in Moab, Utah with us. And it was 180 degrees from the guy I met. I couldn't believe it. It seemed seamless. And I kept thinking, like, well, how does he, like, does he have like a room in the house that's, you know, he has a makeup artist that lives in that room, and like, you know, try this and this and this. And then he's got a wardrobe person over there, and he like has a closets and closets full of shit to try and like work it out. It's gotta be. I mean, it's got to be.
Because how else? How else, right?
I mean, it's just phenomenal. His abilities, like, truly.
That kind of compliment coming from him, I mean, that goes back to your NYU days and your childhood, which you said you are able to go into a character and recall some stuff and apply it. And he saw that in you, which is so cool.
It's wild. I truly, like, so wild. And I mean, just, yeah, he was just the sweetest, like the most fun to work with.
Yeah, my daughter, I showed her who I was interviewing today, aside from my wife having a huge crush on you. But she was like, oh, my God, he's on Riverdale.
Yeah.
And I did a show called Sabrina the Teenage Witch for a number of years, and which is also an Archie comic character.
Yeah.
And they, you know, it was a very like positive version of the show. They went and tried to remake it as this really dark, sinister kind of thing. Yeah. And I believe that's what Riverdale took these really happy, you know, positive characters and turned it into something very dark.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, yeah, they did. Yeah. I don't know. You know that world well enough to know what was true source material and what was extrapolated upon, you know, in terms of, Roberto.
I was a comic book collector when I was a kid. And I mean, I have Archie comics that are 5 cents in plastic.
Wow.
In my garage. So yeah, I know all the characters. You played Jughead's father on the show.
Who I don't think was a massive part of the comics, if I'm not mistaken.
He was Archie's best friend, and it was Betty
His dad. Was his dad much in
there? Oh, No. I remember, like, yeah, Veronica's dad was the rich guy. Right. I don't remember Jughead's dad, but what was your character and how was that experience?
He was a alcoholic biker gang leader.
Oh, jeez.
Of a gang called the Serpents. He didn't really give a damn about his son. And then the evolution was him becoming, you know, a true father and reforming and becoming sheriff by season 3 or 4. It was a wild arc, but you know, the first season I thought was so phenomenal and like so real and like intriguing and kind of a really interesting murder mystery. And you know, it hit the zeitgeist in a way nothing I had done really. I mean, Scream, but Scream was a different time. You know, that was when you'd get in the 90s, you knew you had sort of made it if you had good box office. And how many garbage bags full of handwritten fan mail did you get?
right.
That sort of are. There were no message boards. There was no social media, obviously, any of that thing. And now all of a sudden, you know, you look at Riverdale and it was like, according to Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, it was the number one talked about show for 3 straight years in the world. And so it hit this thing and I couldn't help but think like, why? And my kids were, you know, this was the first job I took outside of LA from the time they were born until until they were 15. And this was, you know, the start of that show. And I was
where did you film?
Vancouver.
Okay.
Doing like four flights a week, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. But what I saw was, like, you know, in that story was, or what I felt was that it really, the parents' part of that story and the way they wrote it so amazingly, it showed kids that parents have flaws and they're at that tender age where they're starting to be able to accept that, or to see, oh, like in those relationships that were in Riverdale with the parents and the kids, like, oh, like I recognize that my dad has that issue or my mom has that issue. Or, and it really gave a voice to, I think, and again, this is all me surmising things, but I think that was part of the allure of it, was this, you know, ability for kids to latch on to that.
Especially at that age, like what you were saying, when kids stop sort of idolizing the parent and looking at everything they know and believe to be what you know and believe, you're starting to form your own opinions as a kid and seeing these flawed humans, right? That's really interesting. Yeah.
I think that had a lot. I think it had something to do with it. And then, of course, there's Cole Sprouse. So, like, you know. he is the greatest dude, I have to tell you. And like we've remained good friends, and like it was, I think the blessing of that show was meeting him, and I just think the world of him. He's so smart. He went to NYU for like anthropology and was doing digs in Africa and had left the business and then decided, you know, I want to, maybe this is for me, let me try again. But he's just such an incredible, fascinating man.
And very, very talented. He's so good and every, you know, when you see these kid actors and what they then become and like how people accept them, and he's really sort of paved his own way. He's really, really good.
Yeah, and he's just got a heart of gold. So but it was an incredible show. Like, I mean, it was a roller coaster of like, you know, sometimes, I mean, I was like 12th on the call sheet or something. So sometimes I'd take these flights up and I'd stand in the background, then I'd fly home and like, you know, and then I'd fly up and say one word and come home. And like, and it just started wearing me out that like, that, you know, I was doing all this travel and it wasn't really necessarily developing. And I was in a renegotiation year and was looking to do other things. And so I left it like after four seasons, but.
Yeah, well, that's an interesting point you bring up, that, you know, it's like the antithesis to the Full House, Perfect Family kind of show, which, you know, I know people take comfort in, but it might make them feel like, oh my God, my life's not like this.
Yeah.
It's an interesting point.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am, like I am, where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, if no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s.
She looked like $1 million.
With zero qualifications.
She had a Harvard plaque.
Tricks her way past a wall of lawyers and agents.
She's got all of these Maseratis and Bentleys all in the driveway.
Is it like a mansion?
Yes, it's a mansion. That this queen of the con uses to scam some of the biggest names in professional sports out of untold fortunes.
About $6 million.
Approximately $11 million.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
Employing whatever means necessary to bleed her victims dry.
She would probably have sex with one of her clients.
Hide your money in your old Richmond, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, this is Paris Hilton. Trapped in Treatment is back, and this season we're taking on WASP.
They held us in dog cages. They starved us. They beat us. They burned us and subject us to really horrible, cruel and unusual punishment.
After my personal experience at Provo Canyon School, I was shocked to learn that a man named Robert Litchfield, a man who got his start at the school that I went to, would go on to create a multi-million dollar empire.
He was trying to brand us, so we were going to become the McDonald's in treatment.
The Worldwide Association of Specialty Programs in Schools.
They prey on, you know, a parent's really natural and beautiful love for their children in a really, really, unfortunately, effective way.
At this time in my life now, if someone presented this program to me, and not just because I've already experienced it, sham, scam, beware.
Listen to Season 2 of Trapped in Treatment on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Skeet, let me ask you something. Have you ever, just listening to you talk about, you mentioned Cassavetes, like, have you ever directed? Is that something?
I made a short for my daughter, who is an actress and, you know, has been most of her, like, growing up on sets. You know, she had no choice, really, although my son in a completely different direction. That's her twin brother. And, you know, I wanted to show her what, you know, what it was like and the demands of it, you know, because she wanted to do it as a kid, and I never wanted, you know, I was offered go doing plays at YADA and plays around, you know, at school and all that stuff, and but not the business part of it. Like, I don't know. So we made this short. We won the Williamsburg Film Festival in Brooklyn. She won.
Oh, wow.
It's a long short. It's like 23 minutes long, which we didn't make it for like the festival circuit or anything, but some people, you know, liked it and were like, you should submit it here and do this and that. And it did really well. It was sort of amusing. On my daughter used to go up on this roof and do her homework, and you can't really see any houses around me at all. But when you get on the roof, you can see straight to my neighbor's front door. And she came down, she was like maybe 11 or something. And, you know, and we're sitting at dinner, and I was like, what would you do if you like looked over and saw somebody breaking in the neighbor's house? And then he looked back and saw you. And then it this sort of idea of like, oh, that's a great kickoff for this and this and this and this. And it was fun. We shot it in 5 days for like $5,000. And I had friends who had a couple red cameras that came over and, you know, shot, and a buddy who was a sound mixer, and, you know, and Lenny James, who I had done Jericho with, played this robber who really becomes the hero of the story. So I called in a bunch of favors, and we just had a good time. And I shot it very Cassavetes style, these long lingering wides or Altman style as well, like, and then just flowing in from one space to the next. And wish I had much more expensive toys the entire time.
Right. Wait, is there any way where we can see this?
I could personally send it to you.
It's okay.
On one of my Dropbox things or whatever. I don't know, one of those apps somewhere. I'll find it.
I'd love to see that, man. But there's a new show we want to talk about.
Yeah, it comes out Sunday on AMC.
And this is Parrish, right? This is the Giancarlo. Wait, so let's come full circle.
Yeah.
Is this the first time you have seen or worked with him since he guest taught your class?
I ran into him on an airplane coming back from Albuquerque. We were both had been working in Albuquerque and coming back to LA, and he remembered me and was like, I had been, I've been following you and you're doing so great and blah, blah, blah. He's such a sweetheart.
Oh, he was probably doing either Breaking Bad or Better Call Saul, right?
Yeah. Hi. Yeah. I think it was Better Call Saul at that point, if I'm not mistaken. And we wound up sitting beside each other and talking the entire way back and, about all kinds of different stuff from meditation and transcendental meditation and Joe Dispenza, who he's a big, proponent of and follower of. And he sent me a book about him. And then, we sort of kept loosely in touch, but not really. And then this thing came along and I didn't say a word to him. I never hit him up, nothing. I was just like, I'm going to put myself on tape and see what happens. And they responded to it. And then I didn't see him until we were in New Orleans, in pre-production. But
what a great life moment. So amazing to look back to whatever your 19-year-old self to now. And just tell us a little bit about the show. And
it's really fascinating. He plays a man who a year prior to the story starting, his 19-year-old was murdered in one of the wards in New Orleans. And it's a story about a man going through grief and great depression because of that. And his business is falling apart. He's got a small, black car limousine, car service, around New Orleans with 6 or 8 cars and small, but it's falling apart. He can't get the loan to save it. His marriage of forever is falling apart. They're going to have to sell the house. His daughter's at odds with them. And then one night his old partner, when they used to do crimes together, he had left the crime world 20 years prior, but his partner did 17 years in the toughest prison in the US, Angola, for the crimes they had done together, never ratted him out, nothing. And he's been out a year and gets himself in a situation where he could get killed and comes to his old friend for help. And Giancarlo's character gets lured back into the criminal world.
God, this sounds good.
I play that friend who's like a crazy Cajun, which is the most fun accent on the planet in my mind.
My daughter's at school in New Orleans. She goes to Tulane, and my wife went to Tulane. We spend a lot of time there, but what an interesting place to shoot. My God, that must be so fun.
It was. I mean, it's, as you know, it's a dangerous place. And when we were there, I don't know if it is still, but this was in 22. It was the murder cap. And so we were aware. And you just got to be careful where you go and when. But
to me, it's the food, music, culture capital of the world. I look at all the good stuff there,
Oh, you're right. I shouldn't label it in that way, because you are right.
I didn't know that.
It is the best food, the nicest people, the great music, the architecture, the history.
Oh my gosh,
You're right. I shouldn't stick it with that.
No, it is. Let's see, go on Bourbon Street.
Both can be true. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, where does the show air?
On AMC.
AMC, okay.
Plus, it's a week at a time. We shot 6 episodes, and hopefully we'll do more.
Great. A week at a time. You make them wait, like old school.
Yeah. I wonder if they'll just wait to binge it.
That's true. That is true, right?
Like 12 people watched the first episode.
No, people will watch the first and then they'll say, we're going to save like to be able to, right?
Probably it too.
Yeah. Oh, I can't wait to see it. I can't wait to see amazing. You and the two of you together. And what a great story.
Thank you. It was a blast. I, you know, maybe we'll talk more about it another time, but it has a whole set of other stories that were just life-changing as well. I love that man, Giancarlo. He is truly one of the most talented, but also one of the most gracious, full, loving person on the planet.
He's so good. I mean, as a Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul fan, it's like the second he steps on screen, and he's in everything. He's been around for he's been around doing this for so long, and he kind of doesn't age either. I feel like he looks so good. He's been around forever and he still looks the same.
Swims every morning, work or not. Like, he swims, yoga, meditation. Like, he is on it. And
it's the key.
Of course.
It's a good role model, good teacher, man.
Yeah.
Good mentor that you have. But, dude, this was awesome. I mean, thank you so much for taking on this journey.
I am so like this. I want to give you a hug through the screen. Next time, we say this all the time with friends of ours that we've had on. But next time we're in LA, I'd love to say hi and give you a squeeze. Yeah.
Yes, please do. Mm-hmm. Thank you, guys. Thanks so much for having me on. And
yeah, your third podcast. It wasn't that bad, right?
It's awesome.
It went by like that. Yeah. Thank you, Ski.
It was really fun. And you guys are amazing. So thanks for your time. And
The best. You're the best.
Thank you. Take care.
Okay.
All right.
Bye.
Thank you, buddy.
Bye.
I mean, really, what can you say? What a great guy, right?
That was amazing to hear. I mean, I like only having worked with him when we were kids, like literally like early 20s when we did The Craft. And he was so on the rise. I remember that, you know, and just knowing him a little bit, like I had no idea the sort of depth of his story. And I mean, his real love of The Craft, like not the, no pun intended, not the movie The Craft, but the way he talks about acting and performing and the way he sees characters. And I mean, and he's just worked with some of the like all time greats.
Yes. I got to say,
like, what an amazing
career. You started
career.
NYU and David Mamet and Bill Macy are your teachers. And then the movies that he got, one after the other. I mean, it reminded me of like Bonnie Hunt, you know, who went and auditioned for Rain Man and then just kept working with the greatest people in the industry. Like, some people, I don't know, they have that path where they just do the most amazing quality project after project.
And yes. Great directors, great actors he worked with. And what a cool career. And I always love to hear, like, even the way you just talked about being 12th on the call sheet and going to do Riverdale and like making that commitment at that time in his life to kind of, you know, leave town and try something different. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, and then after 4 years realizing like that, okay, that was, that ran its course, but like, you know, that sort of lack of ego of just, it doesn't matter if there's something cool to work on with interesting people, that's a character you haven't played. Like, it doesn't matter where you fall on the call sheet. Like, I don't know. I think that's pretty great.
I didn't watch Riverdale, but I obviously was aware of it. But my kids, when they even Hannah, who's home for spring break, she's 21. She looked at his picture. She's like, oh my gosh, the dad on Riverdale.
Exactly. That's what Ella watched that first season. I remember the season he talked about, this murder mystery season where it was like, I just remember that's all Ella talked. They were so upset. Yeah, she and her friends. Yeah.
The biggest thing. But you know who I think was the other dad? I think Archie's dad was played by Luke Perry.
Right? Yes. That was so great. That thanks for listening, everybody. Come on back next week.
Yeah, we have a good one next week. And I hope you enjoyed Skeet Ulrich. Have a great week.
Thanks for listening. Make sure to subscribe and give us 5 stars.
And please follow us on Instagram at HeyDudeTheNineties Called. See you next time.
I used to have so many men.
how this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like a million bucks.
...scams a bunch of famous athletes out of untold fortunes...
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
It's just unbelievable.
Hide your money in your old Richmond, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, this is Paris Hilton. Trapped in Treatment is back, and this season we're taking on WASP, the Worldwide Association of Specialty Programs and Schools.
They held us in dog cages. They starved us. They beat us.
He was trying to brand us, so we were going to become the McDonald's of kid treatment.
Join my host as they unravel the story of the largest and most shocking organization in the history of the troubled teen industry. Listen to Season 2 of Trapped in Treatment on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.